This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is a practical show done by a practical, sort of everyday guy like me. Yeah, I do a little bit of firearms training, but let's not forget, folks, my background was just coming from an everyday guy who liked to shoot and liked to own handguns, probably just like you listening to this show. So I try to keep this rooted in common sense and give you some good practical info that you can use. This episode, I've got some voicemails to cover, and I also have a very short interview with Chris Rainey that I think you're really going to like. You know, I like listener participation, and that's what this is all about. This is about listener participation and Chris Rainey, who is a range owner. So let's get started with that. Chris Rainey owns Proactive Defense, which is at Quail Creek Range in Argyle, Texas. Now, Quail Creek Range in Argyle is north of Fort Worth in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Most of you know I'm in San Antonio. I'm in the Alamo City. I'm a transplanted Yankee, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live down in South Texas. I did live in North Texas for quite a few years. And I was up there recently, and I had a chance to interview Chris Rainey, the owner of Proactive Defense. Proactivedefense.net is his website. I interviewed him several months back. He's made some changes with his program and with his memberships and everything. So for you listeners from the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area, listen carefully to this. And for those of you who are thinking about starting up a range membership program, this could be really good for you that are starting up a range membership program, or if you're interested in doing something like this. So let's get right to it. Interview with Chris Rainey, and then I've got voicemails coming up. Today I'm with Chris Rainey at Proactive Defense. Chris, welcome.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Good, good. Proactive Defense is up here in Argyle, Texas, at Quail Creek Range, and you got a small but nice part of the range here. And first of all, talk about how long you've been open.
Well, Proactive Defense has been here for 4 years, and it occupies four different ranges on the Quail Creek property. Quail Creek has been here over 30 years, and they have a public range set up for rifle, pistol, and shotgun. They have 100-yard, 50-yard, 25, and 15- and 7-yard pistol. So it's a very large facility for what we have here. We have a lot packed in here. It's a great place to come for your family, the public range I'm talking about. And then Proactive Defense, the vision there was to provide a training place for the CHL carriers to gain the kind of training that they need to be competent and successful.
Which we're going to talk about that. And for people who are not quite up on Texas geography, we're very close to Denton. We're north of Texas Motor Speedway off of 35W, Quail Creek Range, at actually 35W and 1171.
Yep, one exit north of Texas Motor Speedway. And you turn west on 1171, and it's pretty difficult after that because the road dead ends into the gun range after about 100 yards. So it's very difficult to get lost. My ranges are directly behind the office at Quail Creek Shooting Range. When you pull into the parking lot, you'll see the classroom and the office, green buildings, and there's a little road off to the left, and that leads up to my facility.
And one thing I like about what you offer is you offer monthly memberships here. Talk a little bit about some of the value of the monthly memberships.
Well, we have, initially, when we started the club program, we had one membership, and I set up a membership that I would want to do, since I didn't know anything else, and that was a $30 a month, $10 an hour to shoot, and you get a free lesson from me every month. That's a $40 value. So I thought that that would be a great selling point, and that would be something I would be interested in, and that's been very successful. But as people got into the program and went through training, they started approaching me about different types of memberships, and I said, well, yeah, well, how would we do it? And so I let them come up with the plan, and so we have another club membership, which is $50 a month, and it's just prepaid 8 hours range time a month. And we have a number of them that really like that.
That's a lot. 8 hours of range time is quite a bit.
It is per month. I have some people using that much. But if you go over that, it's $10 an hour. But that's a good thing for the competition shooters that don't necessarily want training. They're interested in competition. And, you know, different things for different people, and that's fine. We're trying to do something for everybody. We do a lot of competitions up here. Then the next level of training that was brought to my attention was what we call the Platinum, and that's prepaid 2-hour blocks. We have a lot of 2-hour blocks, and the people that were doing those 2-hour blocks that we built all that around, learned how to do it with, said, we just want to prepay for those. We're tired of paying you every time we come up. I like going to the cash box and all that. Just they want to take care of that. And so we have this Platinum membership, which prepays their range time and prepays their 2-hour blocks, whether it's rifle, pistol, or shotgun classes. And we do 2-hour blocks every week, nearly rifle and pistol. So it's a great deal if somebody wants to learn how to shoot. A success story, I have a couple that, older couple, she's 62 and he's probably 67, Vietnam vet, retired. They hadn't done any gun work in a long time. She never had. And so they showed up here about 2 months ago, and it was pretty dismal. They just got interested in shooting. They just been going to the public range and heard about me and kind of stumbled up here. And we got them in their first lesson and started teaching them something. And I told them about the Platinum membership. And so they just plugged into that. And they've been coming every Wednesday night, like a bowling league. We do something different every Wednesday night. You should see them shoot now. There is not much that I can't do to them they can't figure a plan out of.
Weren't you telling me earlier that the woman's, she's making hits out to 100 yards?
Yeah, yeah, she's banging steel at 100 yards with ease. And you just, that's a success story to me. And, you know, she's not an athlete. She's not anything. She's a grandmother, and but she does, her gun handling is great. I wouldn't want her shooting at me at any distance. You know, she's very good. So that's a success story. When I see people like that walk up and I go, man, we did something like that here. It
makes it worthwhile.
Yes, it does. It makes me just pop my buttons off.
Well, that's what we as instructors live for. We live for those success stories like that. And I want people to understand that what you're running here is not just an ordinary range. People can come here and they can practice things that they can't practice in most places. You can draw from the holster. You can move and shoot. You can practice your advanced skills that you learn. You can even come out here. You even offer shooting full autos out here, don't you?
Yes, under my supervision.
Yes, under your supervision. But
I have to be here.
You have to be here. But there's not a lot of places that will offer that. And, you know, so people that are looking for a place to go and practice the moving and shooting, the drawing and shooting, the rapid fire and all that with their handguns, this is a good place to come.
It is. And it's a friendly place. It's a happy place. It's, you know, we all have fun here. Our competitions are lighthearted. It's laid back and people enjoy each other out here. We do cookouts sometimes. We do fun shoots. We do Appleseed. If you know about that, it's .22 rifle shooting. That's a fun thing to do. They teach Revolutionary War history on the breaks. It's an awesome thing.
Nice.
I just got back from teaching in Cloudcroft, New Mexico, and I taught a class. And for the most part, I took my people from here out there, and we were in the National Forest doing a class at a 4-H facility. 200-foot trees all around us, and I had the women and the men shooting at 75 yards, making hits, good hits at 75 easily. It was kind of tough training conditions. It wasn't a range. We were shooting into the mountain as a backstop, but challenging from an instructing standpoint. But sometimes I just stop the class and tell everybody, look around you, just listen. It's just so beautiful. And y'all, if this goes on the air anytime soon, we had to wear jackets in the morning. You know, so we're from Fort Worth here. It's 115 in the shade, so I was very pleased with that.
Well, you're lucky on that.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, Chris, if I lived in North Texas, you know, $30 or $50 a month would be a slam dunk. Because, you know, most people go to the square range, the public range, where they don't even allow you to draw out of the holster, and you can only shoot one round per second, and you can't move anywhere, and you're standing there, and you're plinking, and you're putting holes in paper, and burning off a lot of ammo. this would be a no-brainer to come out here and practice the defensive skills that we teach.
Yes, it's a good place to do it, and that's what I opened it for.
Yeah.
I designed it with that in mind. I wish I had more law enforcement out here. I have maybe 10 law enforcement people that are paying their own way out here. I wish I had more, but we cater to the civilian population, to the CHL holder, and that's where our business emphasis is.
Yeah. So the last question I want to ask you, talk about the different courses you offer, because you're a pretty good instructor, and I've heard a lot of good things about your classes. Talk about some of the classes you teach here.
Well, we have handgun broken down into three levels, one, two, and three, or actually four levels now, a fifth coming up, and we keep adding classes. I'm in the process of rewriting all that, but the level one, two, and three will still be there. And basically, the first one is fundamentals, holster work, moving targets, slight movement on your part, teaching you how to move offline. And then the next one is level two, and that's going to be malfunction clearances, speed reloads or emergency reloads, and then tactical reloads. I still teach that. I like those. It's good magazine management.
Everybody ought to know how to do it.
And then we'll teach you how to shoot from cover, and we shoot from the vehicle in level two, so you see what that's like, shooting around the vehicle, using it for cover, talking about the different things that you need to watch for on a car, because that is one thing that's in all of our society's cars.
Vehicle shooting, now I have to come up and do one of those.
It's pretty fun. It's loud. I did that in the women's class, and one of the gals had a Ruger 38, and she, you know, we carried plus P's in those, and she never had shot those at night, and so I said, she says, can I shoot it from the car? I said, shoot, yeah, go ahead. So she touches one off, and it lights up the inside of the car, and everybody goes, oh. And then she grins, and she goes, can I shoot another one? I said, as many as you want. Bang away. A lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. You know, you need to shoot from a vehicle to see what the concussion's like. It's different. And get used to it. And then we talk about what the bullet does going through the windows, if you have to shoot through that. And just different things that people need to be thinking about vehicle-wise. And then the third class is what we did today. That's moving and shooting. And today we introduced ground fighting. I haven't taught that in the past, but I've been looking for some new stuff that I want to add to our curriculum. And so that'll be one of them. And we concentrate on movement, stepping offline, moving forward and back and moving at a diagonal, and how to move and not get yourself out of the way of the muzzle if it's possible to do so. And then our level four class is a rifle combo where you're doing transition drills from rifle to pistol.
Yep.
And we're setting up scenarios in that. We're doing one of those next weekend. That's level four. And level five is a hand-to-hand gun retention class, I guess what I would call it. Then we also have a home defense class. We have a vehicle defense class where that's all we do. We go into your home and teach you how to defend your home.
Really? That's good.
Yeah, we shoot airsoft in there in the homes. I got these airsoft that shoot a Velcro ball so it doesn't chip the paint. And I have a lot of fun doing those because usually the man wants to do it and the wife's like, oh, brother. But I've usually been successful at engaging the women. And once they get a shoot at me a couple of times, they're in it. They're like, that's just fun. I'm getting my CHL. I'm going to do this and that. And, you know,
isn't it amazing how when you finally get people shooting, then all of a sudden they're sold, they're convinced, and they want to do it.
They have fun then. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have fun. And plus they realize that how well they can actually defend themselves.
They can. And it's not that hard to do. It's the least amount of training time on any kind of defensive tool.
Yeah. You know,
that's what I think the gun does for us.
That's kind of cool. The other thing I like that you do, Chris, is you host outside instructors. You've had Suarez International classes here. You've had me and Ben up here several times. And who else do you bring in?
I have a police department that comes in and teaches. I have, I don't know, I have to think about that. But I've had a number come in. We've had several medical classes. And
tactical medicine classes.
Yeah, right? And then that's kind of popular. I have another guy, he's a retired Green Beret. Military guy, and he does a survival class. I'm not a real survival. I'm not big on that, but it is a big subject.
It is a big subject, yes.
I'm kind of, after being out here for 4 years, I'm kind of like, well, okay, What's the Boy Scout version of that? And I think we need to all be Boy Scouts. We can see from
be prepared.
At what level? I don't know about that. I can't tell you. I watch Doomsday Preppers and I say, that ain't interested in that. But just learning how to shoot is some form of preparation.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, learning how to shoot and defend yourself is a big part of being a prepper and being a survivalist. Because at some point, you know, as I always say, at some point if things get bad, there's going to be a level of violence. Yeah. And you got to be able to deal with it.
The more of us that can do this, nobody should be a victim. The more of us that can do this, the less of a problem we're going to have, you know.
Well, I think the very definition of survival is if somebody attacks you and you live and he doesn't, that's the definition of survival.
Yeah, you're a survivalist, I guess, yes.
Talk a little bit about your background, Chris.
Well, I've been in martial arts for most of my life at some level. Did it as a kid, and then I wasn't great. I wasn't a bad, tough guy or anything. I was just normal. But I enjoyed it. And then, police officer-wise, we got back into martial arts. I became a police officer and did arrest control tactics, which I thought was more judo or jiu-jitsu oriented, aikido. And that's more useful for what we're interested in, joint locks and things like that, rather than kicking and punching. That just made more sense, and I like that kind of stuff. When my kids got old enough, I got back into it. And about that time, I got out of police work, and I'd been the firearms instructor at the department and defensive tactics heavily involved in all that stuff. So I had the background to do what I'm doing now, fortunately, because I had to go fly airliners. I had to be an airline pilot.
Okay, that's good.
My dad says, don't do it, but I had to go do it.
I got a few pilots that listen to this show because I've met them.
All the pilots out there will appreciate it. Well, I did that for 15 years, had a great job. And then they furloughed us, and so then there weren't any flying jobs in this hemisphere. So it's kind of like, now what am I going to do? And one of the ideas that I thought about was starting a shooting school. And I didn't plan that it would work out like this. But it's worked out far better than I would have ever dreamed.
Awesome.
And I feed my hungry teenagers. I have fun doing it. I miss flying, but I love this. I've always loved this.
Well, I got to admit, I'm a little jealous. I wish I had my own range like this and my own facility, and I, you know, people came to me for classes at my own facility. This would be great.
Well, Bob,
this would be awesome.
When it's your own facility, you got to vacuum the floor.
Well, then
you're
maybe
the head
I wouldn't
floor vacuumer, and you're the head everything out here. So
you're the head range maintenance guy.
Yeah,
too,
you're
aren't
all
you?
That, and you're out here sweating every day, but it's still fun. You go home at night and you feel like you've done something.
Yeah.
And when I see these people that come out here, I love them all. When they come out here, I can't tell you how I feel about them, because I watch them learn and progress, and it gives me a warm feeling, because I just go, man, you know, look what they're doing. You know, they're accomplishing something. I'm helping them. The only other time I ever felt this way was flight instructing. Now, you help somebody get to the point where they solo and they go around the field by themselves, and you go, man, we did something. It's a teamwork exercise.
Yep.
It's not just me. It's they're involved too. And you develop that rapport with them. That's what I like about out here. I have a rapport developed with everybody who comes out here.
Yeah, yeah, you do. And you know, there's some of your members that come through our classes, and they say great things about it.
Yeah.
So tell people where they can find you. What's the website?
ProactiveDefense.net. ProactiveDefense.net. We've got a Facebook page, Proactive Defense.
Telephone number?
My cell phone, 817-919-7990. That's 817-919-7990. All my club information's on the website, my calendar of events, everything you want to know is on there.
All the pricing's on there and everything?
Yeah, give me a call. Let me help you. I'm here to assist you in whatever you need. We have some fun competitions if you like that. We're getting more and more competitors, three gunners. That's a big popular thing. We teach
three
that
gunners,
stuff.
Hugely popular.
We're doing a class in September. I can't pronounce his last name. I still don't know how to pronounce it. Alex from Canada. He's a competition shooter up there, and he's teaching a competition class for us in September. And it's the Canadian top Canadian five-time champion. It's his system that he's teaching.
Nice.
And so all the competitor guys I've got in that class, it's a small class, and the ones that took it last year, they came out of there, they really improved considerably. In their gun handling and in their shot placement.
Very nice. Good.
Chris,
thanks for your time. And make sure you check out his website, proactivedefense.net. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, many thanks to Chris. He gave you his phone number. I gave you his website. Check it out. It's a great facility. I've been there several times. You won't be disappointed. For $30 a month, and you can practice all sorts of cool things and even shoot full auto weapons under his supervision, I think that's pretty cool. So, and thanks for the success story, Chris. I appreciate that. Okay, the next voicemail that I want to cover comes from Byron in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, Bob. It's Byron from Charlotte, North Carolina. I had sent you an email the other day. I just wanted to give you a little background on what happened to me and all the mistakes you can possibly make in a high-stress situation. I don't even know where to begin, and I'll probably leave out some of the details. So maybe if I can write down more later, I'll shoot you an email with all the details. But basically the other night, about 4:30 in the morning, I heard a loud bang next door, looked out my window, noticed a male coming from my neighbor's house at a fast pace going towards the road, looked out, realized he shouldn't be there at that time in the morning, flashlight in hand. First mistake, my wife started flipping the front porch light on and off, and we're on the first floor, so the guy got a good look at me, I got a good look at him, and then I heard more noises coming out the other side of my house. So immediately, second mistake is, we just relocated where we keep all the weapons in our house. We don't keep them in one central location because usually I sleep upstairs. I have a sleeping problem, and my wife's downstairs. So we have one gun in her vicinity, one in mine, and there's a little bit of confusion on where to go. So waking up startled like that first thing in the morning and seeing that, you're half asleep. You're trying to run around, get your shoes on, get outside, see what's going on. Confusion about where the guns were. Managed to get the cell phone, get the call to the police right away, ask the wife to grab the gun, meaning handgun. Unfortunately, she came back with a shotgun. One thing I learned from your podcast and Ben Brand's as well is it's really hard to operate a shotgun with a flashlight in your hand. Besides trying to load the shotgun, have the phone in hand and a flashlight. So major mistake on my end. Once I got outside of my garage, I noticed at that point that my truck was broken into, my wife's car was broken into, lights were on, car doors opened, and I do keep a firearm in my truck, another mistake, overnight. They jammed me the window down, and I saw my box open, handgun gone. So at this point, I knew the person was armed, which sent up very big flags to me. I'm glad I saw that, because as I saw that out of the corner of my eye, I was getting ready to pursue. The cops were saying, you know, can you see where he's going on the phone? I said, no, he's about to go over a ridge. I said, can you get a better look at where he's going? I was just on my way to do that when I noticed my truck was open and the gun was gone. Sorry, but the only thing that flashed through my head was George Zimmerman. And honestly, throughout the whole experience, that's what kept going through my head. So didn't pursue, heard more noises behind my house. At this point, my wife was able to retrieve my handgun. Where to go from there? So apparently this guy had robbed the entire neighborhood, about 22 different cars and homes. He tried to get them in my home. Unfortunately, the outcome was, you know, I didn't go after the guy. There was people behind my barn still. The police never caught. Some of the unfortunate events of it were the fact that, number one, I didn't know how to operate my shotgun under stress. Never trained with my shotgun. Always trained with the handgun. So I guess one of the lessons here is train with every weapon you have, because you never know when you're going to have to use that weapon instead of your primary. Number two, every step of the way, everything that was in my mind was, just going back to that Zimmerman case, I mean, it made me question everything I was doing. So that added to the stress of the situation. Number three was the fact that, you know, I really wanted everything in my heart and soul to go after the guy, considering what he stole from me. But leaving my home at that time would have left my family open, not knowing if there was other people out there, which we found out there were. So if anything good came of this was they actually caught the guy. I got my stuff back. My son, my wife got all their stuff back. The neighbors down the street all got their stuff back, and the guy's facing 22 felonies. The downside of it is we learned we were very vulnerable. We need training. We need to be more prepared for an event like this to happen. And it doesn't help the fact that the guy, when they brought him by to identify, let it be known that he will be back to pay us a visit when he can. A little scary, but, you know, my wife before wasn't a fan of having guns in the house, and now she's all for it, and I think I'm going to be allowed to spend a little bit more money on training and defense. And another thing we did as well is we had a security company came out and put in a monitoring system, motion detectors, you name it, so the next time someone comes on our property, the house is going to light up like the Griswolds at Christmas time. Anyway, Bob, I'm not sure if I covered all the bases on that. Just wanted to fill you in on that and stress again to your audience that training is so important. I realize I lack a lot of it, and I've been listening to your show. I'm trying to take in all the advice I can, and I wasn't living it, and I learned my lesson on that one. So take care. If you have any questions or anything, give me a shout. Thanks.
Okay, the voicemail cut him off before he had a chance to finish, but lesson learned. You need to know what to do in situations like that. And, you know, there's been a thread on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum in my sub-forum. There's been a thread that's been started, a couple of them actually, about the need for training. And one person put a post on there saying that lots of private citizens have prevailed. And even though they've never had any training, by producing a gun, sometimes even just showing a gun in the situation, ends the whole conflict. And yes, sometimes it does. I don't want to rely on that, but sometimes it does. And there's all kinds of stories about private citizens who have prevailed, even though they don't have any training. In other words, they've successfully defended themselves. But listen to Byron's story. If you have to rewind this and go back and listen to it again, maybe training for situations like this, or just training in general, might have enabled a little bit of a different response to that threat. What do you think? It might help you. And here's the other benefit of training, okay? You get to test your gear. You get to test your gear under stress. Folks, I've lost count of how many holsters didn't work for people, how many sights didn't work for people, how many people missed clicking off the safety when they thought that they were really good at it, but you put them under pressure, you give them a timer, and you put them under pressure. And gang, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to be under pressure if you have to use your firearm. Your mind is going to be spinning, and you're going to be under a great deal of pressure. If you can't handle the pressure of a buzzer going off at the range or an instructor saying fire or fight, if you can't handle that kind of pressure, how are you going to be able to handle the pressure that Byron just found himself under? Or somebody attacking you on the street or something like that. So you get to test gear. You get to test yourself. You get to see just how good you really are. Yes, there have been private citizens that have prevailed in self-defense, even though they have not had any training. I admit that that's true. I value my life enough to where I want to go test my gear and make sure it's working and make sure it's working for me. And I want to test myself to see just what it is that I really can do. Some food for thought. Next is Dan from Las Vegas.
Hey, Bob. This is Dan Vames from Homestead Dividends. A couple things. One, you had a recent episode about carrying guns and checking them in your in luggage, carrying them onto a plane. I want to let you know that was really helpful for me when I was traveling. And you posted something that you weren't sure about, and you were talking about skycabs, whether or not you can check your gun in with the skycab. And actually, that's how I did it here in Las Vegas. I presented everything to my skycab, and he took care of all the paperwork for me, and it was just absolutely smooth sailing. And the same thing at the other end of the other airport, the skycab handled everything. So just to let you know and your listeners know that's a possibility. You can use them. Also, in another episode, you recent one, you were just talking about M&Ps. And I just really, really, really enjoyed that episode, mostly because I was thinking about getting an M&P. I think it feels better in my hand than the Glock that I have. Unfortunately, right now, they're very hard to find. I'm looking for one that in 45 ACP with thumb safety in brown. That's virtually impossible. I think the thumb safety is just a great option. I was actually considering getting a Glock and having a safety put on it, because that's my own personal preference. But why would I spend $125 for something I think should be on the gun? So having that option just, I think, puts the M&P ahead of the Glock as far as I'm concerned, and just putting their customers first, and I just really like the gun as well. So when the price is right, I think I'll get one. Right now, they're just too hard to come by, and I don't feel like spending the money to go to a gun show to buy a gun. So I did the next best thing. I bought some Smith & Wesson stock instead, knowing how popular their product is. Anyway, shoot straight, and love the show, Bob. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Thank you, Dan. You know, since he left that voicemail, I actually tried this. I recently took a trip, and I checked my handgun in my checked luggage. I checked it in with the SkyCap. And lo and behold, Dan, you are right. The SkyCap did a great job of taking care of everything. For some reason, I was under the impression that if I was taking a handgun in my checked luggage on an airplane, I was under the impression that I had to go to the ticket counter. But I tested this. I was on Southwest Airlines recently, and maybe every airline's different. I don't know, but Southwest was awesome. The SkyCap knew exactly what to do. He took care of it, and I got to bypass the ticket counter. So, Dan, thank you. By the way, listen to his podcast if you're kind of a prepper mindset, the Homestead Dividends podcast. If you just search Homestead Dividends on iTunes, or even if you Google Homestead Dividends podcast, you'll find it. So, Dan, thank you. I appreciate you calling that in. Next is Jeff from Minnesota.
Hey, Bob. Jeff here from Minnesota. Called before. It's been a little while. There's two things that you always say. One, get some training. And number two, take the best and forget the rest. Well, I spent about 20 hours this weekend in a training class and learned some great things, met some great people that I hope to shoot with again. And wanted to kind of iterate on a couple of the items that I feel are important. You've brought them up in the past. One is move, move, move. Always shoot on the move. And there's so many of us that spend our time at square range and we just only have a 3-foot box to move in. It's something that's incredibly important, doing reloads, doing malfunction drills, everything on the move. And the only time to stand still is when you're actually shooting. Number two, if you ever get the opportunity, I should say never pass on the opportunity to do a night shoot. We had about an hour and a half from dusk to absolute darkness, and it's amazing to see how everyone's skills kind of drop significantly when the lights go out. It really puts a focus on all of your skill set, pulling it all together, grip, stance, sighting, gun, everything. There's also a combat medicine module, which was outstanding, only about a half hour long, but it was enough to give everybody that had no medical experience a good knowledge level on treating gunshot wounds. Lastly, we also got to do a multi-target engagement from contact distance, where you're literally almost touching the target, to 5, 10, 15, or 20 yards, and it was amazing to see how virtually everyone rushed their shot at the longest distance. So take your time making those long-distance shots, make them count. Lastly, we had a Glock 19 that went down. Yes, your beloved Glock 19. On the last day, one of the guns went down, and the gentleman had to borrow somebody else's gun to finish the shoot. But it happens to the best of guns. So with that, keep up the great work. We love the show, and shoot straight, shoot safe.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. I've been preaching that for a long time on this show. Moving and shooting. You know, my first exposure to that was Suarez International. You know, they're really big on learning to move, shoot, make hits, even point shooting and shooting without the use of sights and so forth. And you know, pistol gunfighting. And when I first took close-range gunfighting, you know, that's when I learned to shoot up close and personal from basically contact distance to your bad guy. And with advanced close-range gunfighting, we're going to get into a whole lot more of that. That's coming up in November, November 9th and 10th in San Antonio, for those of you in South Texas. If you haven't signed up for John Payne's Advanced Close-Range Gunfighting Suarez International course, there's room left. That will be a huge game changer. I think there's really three gunfighting classes that are big game changers that Suarez teaches. Close-range gunfighting, advanced close-range gunfighting, and point shooting progressions. But Jeff, you're right. You're exactly right. Move, move, move. Right? I've said this before. Why would you want to stand there and make yourself an easy target for the bad guy to hit? Just think about that. I don't get that. It's much more difficult to shoot a moving target with a handgun. Why not make yourself a moving target. Ben and I teach that kind of stuff in our classes as well. And your point, Jeff, about night shoots, I've done that twice. I've done some low-light competition matches. I really want to get out and take a low-light gunfighting class. That's a day or two in length, or an evening or two in length. But I have done a couple of nighttime indoor IDPA low-light matches. Most attacks happen in low light or in darkness. I'll say that again. Most attacks happen in low light and in darkness. But what do people do? They practice in the broad daylight. It's a whole different ball game being able to see your target and make hits and even use a flashlight or use a light that's on your gun, a weapon-mounted light. Do you know how to use a weapons-mounted light? Can you use that, and can you use it effectively? Do you know when to use it, when to turn it on, when not to turn it on, how to use it, or if you're using a handheld flashlight? Do you know how to use that? Those are all types of things. You know, you might have a pistol and a flashlight next to your bed. Have you practiced in darkness or in low light using those? Think about that one. So, Jeff, thank you very much for that voicemail. Okay, let's go to Mexican Joe in Northeast Texas.
Hey, Bob. Mexican Joe up here in Northeast Texas. Hey, I was calling in about your recent podcast on Handgun World about voicemail. In response to Damian from Dallas, who asked about having a firearm in your bug-out bag. First off, Bob, shame on you for not carrying your bug-out bag in your rental vehicle. Mr. Murphy will slap you down one day if you leave your bug-out bag at home. But back to Damien, yes, you should always have a weapon in your bug-out bag. I suggest, because it's the simplest sidearm with full complement of magazines. I happen to carry a Ruger P89 in 9mm. I'm guessing I've got 8 magazines and a spare box of ammo to reload those magazines. I carry it's with my bug out bag at all times. If I've got to carry a firearm other than that, then I'll just carry it. But I've always got a weapon in my vehicle, at least one. I've always got my bug out bag in my vehicle. I have 2 vehicles, so if I should happen to have to change vehicles for a week or so, my bug-out bag changes as well as my sidearm, so it moves with me. If I'm going to the grocery store or something a couple minutes away, not that big a deal. If I happen to jump in the other vehicle, I won't necessarily take my bug-out bag because if I'm within 10 miles, I can get home. My firearm still does go with me, though. If I go any type of a trip for work or whatever, my bug-out bag is with me at all times. Mr. Murphy will jump up and slap you down the moment you don't have something that you need, whether it be your weapon or your bug-out bag. So just think smart and don't let Mr. Murphy slap you down. All right. Thank you much to everybody, and thank you, Damien, for the question. That was a good question. Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Joe, you'll be happy to know my bug-out bag or my get-home bag or my 72-hour emergency bag, whatever name you want to give it, it is in my vehicle at all times now. I no longer neglect that. So good point. Yes, that was a good question by Damien several weeks ago. And Joe, that was a very good response. Speaking of Damien, he actually has a few voicemails here. I'm going to put 2 of them together. And then he's got one on a different subject. So I'm going to put 2 of them together about being a Glock or an M&P armorer, for those of you who are either have done it or thinking about doing it. And then he's got another one about the gun culture in general. Let's take Damien's first voicemail on M&P and Glock armorer.
Hey, Bob, this is Damien from Dallas. Just wanted to respond to episode 243. About the M&P pistols. First of all, I want to say it was a great podcast. I love listening to Ben's excitement, everything he learned. I understand how he feels. When I took my Glock Armors course from Glock, I felt the same way about the Glock. But what I wanted to mention is you asked to kind of get my perspective as well. First of all, I think the M&P guns sound like they're fantastic. I don't own one. I plan on adding one to my collection here in the future. Because although I love Glocks and I carry Glocks and I'm a Glock farmer, certified Glock farmer, it doesn't mean that I don't like other guns. I'll pretty much carry any gun. If you were to gift them to me, I'll probably carry every type of gun made to man. But with that said, I think if Ben took the Glock Armors course, I think he would probably know a little bit. I think he'd probably feel a little differently about the Glock, because if you try to learn how to break down a Glock on your own, which can be done because it's a simple pistol, you're probably still doing some things or don't understand some basic things about what makes it so easy to break down. So I just, you know, from that perspective, I think if Ben was to take the Glock Armors class, he'll probably get a few aha moments in there. The Glock only has 36 parts total. Not sure about the M&P, but I know the Glock is super simple. 28 of those are interchangeable between all models, which makes it super easy to maintain, especially if you're an armor for like a police department or whatever have you, a military armor. So the Glock is very, very simple. But the thing I wanted you to take away with my comments is that everything on the Glock, I mean, you're splitting hairs. If you're talking about, oh, it's going to be 4 seconds less on an M&P to remove a pin, well, that's fine, but that's not really, I mean, you're splitting hairs. The bottom line is it sounds like both weapons are very simple to break down. And that's really what we ought to take away from that. I will tell you this. Even if you over-lube the Glock, you're not going to break it. If the Glock triggers the Glock's trigger spring broke, the Glock will still fire. Unlike an M&P, from what I understand, but it won't fire. The sights on the Glock are not the best to ship with it, but the Glock's cheaper than the M&P. And if you decide to change the sights, which most people have a particular preference, anyway, at least the Glock's is easy to change. So, you know, so when you really look at everything on a level playing field, it's really not that big of a deal. So, but anyways, at any rate, I thought that the podcast was great. I like what Ben had to say. And I know that you carry an M&P shield, and that sounds like a really nice pistol that I'll probably be interested in. I guess what I was trying to wrap up and say is that it sounds like both weapons are very well built. Sounds like both of them are very simple to break down. I mean, if, you know, if one is 4 seconds or one pin less than the other, who cares? But overall, the maintenance of the entire life of the pistols is very important. Again, there's nothing in a Glock that you can damage by over-lubing it. If you break the trigger spring on a Glock, it'll still fire. And if you don't like the sights, which most people will change the factory sights because it's a very personal preference, at least the Glock is very super simple to fit, to change. What it sounds like from Ben is the front side M&P. Is not so easy to change. So, I mean, again, you're splitting hairs there. At the end of the day, I think what we got here are two very well-built modern pistols. You should fit them to your hand, make sure that, you know, it's something that you like. If the Glock feels better to you, get a Glock. If the M&P feels better to you, get an M&P. But I think you're splitting hairs with, oh, one pin less, 4 seconds faster. But then you can flip the coin and say, well, you can't break the Glock by doing things incorrectly. So with that said, just wanted to say great podcast. I think M&Ps do sound like a great pistol, and I look forward to adding one to my collection. So with that, take care, Bob. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Damien. You know, some of you out there might find it difficult to believe when you hear me say what I'm about to say right now, but I am giving some very serious thought to adding one, possibly two M&P pistols to my concealed carry rotation. I do like them that much. After doing that podcast with Ben and researching them and studying them, keep in mind, I own the older versions and I wasn't incredibly impressed, but the new ones coming out, especially the Pro Series and the Core Series, they have really got my attention. Yeah, I sure love my beloved Glock 19, and I'll always have a beloved Glock 19, but, you know, and by the way, Jeff made a good point, by the way, Jeff from Minnesota. Yes, even Glocks do fail. I get that, Jeff. I'll still always have my wonderful Glock 19. However, M&Ps are really appealing in a lot of ways. They've improved the trigger. There are Apex trigger kits that you can put into them. You can also send them over to Smith & Wesson, and you can have a Performance Center trigger put in them for $150. The thing I like about that is sending it over to Smith & Wesson. Then Smith has done the work. Smith & Wesson has done the work. It does not void the warranty. And it might be an easier argument to make saying that, well, the factory did the work and they used factory parts and factory craftsmanship to do it. It wasn't me, or I didn't put any aftermarket parts in the gun. So that's also kind of appealing, and I sure like the way that they function. I like the way that they feel. I like the way that they're very well built. And, of course, you know, Glocks are going to be around a very, very long time, serve people for a very, very long time, and I will still always have Glocks. But I'm really taking a serious look at the M&P pistols once again. Damien, great email, good points. He's got one more thing he wants to say about the gun culture, and then I'll wrap up the voicemails for this episode.
Hey, Bob, this is Damien from Dallas, man. Just finished listening to your Risk versus Reward, a great podcast. But, hey, I wanted to touch base with you on something that, I need to, like, grab a burger with you and Ben when you're in town, or maybe I need to go down south and hang out with you guys, because there's just a lot of topics in my mind. And I thought, hey, you know, I got a guy that has a podcast. Let me go ahead and give him some topics of discussion. Maybe you can bring this up on your podcast. But, you know, in the gun culture, there's anti-gunners, right, anti-gun people, or I like to call them pro-crime. And then you have the gun culture, the freedom lovers, right? And there's enough battle there going on in our society here in the United States to keep us busy for many, many years. But, you know, on the other side, I was thinking about within the gun culture, why is it that we fight amongst ourselves so much? You know, there's a difference between pride and ego. I won't go into those. Maybe you can expand on that. But a lot of times the ego gets in the way of us as a gun culture supporting each other and focusing on fighting against the anti-gunners rather than fighting amongst ourselves. Why is it that someone that carries a 1911 cannot justify? Okay, let me say this differently. Why is it that in most cases, someone that carries a 1911 can't justify their choice by sharing what they like about the platform, where in most cases what they do is they share about what they hate about other platforms? Why is it that someone that carries a Glock can't share why they chose the Glock platform for their personal reasons without trying to bash other guns or other platforms? You know, it seems like the gun culture is so emotionally attached to their decisions that they, a lot of cases, they seem to attack other people's choices. And this goes across everything. By the time I like training, well, I don't believe in appendix carry because I carry .30, therefore you must be a knucklehead. Well, I carry appendix and you carry .30, you must be a knucklehead. Rather than just saying, hey, we're all in the same family here. You have reasons why you carry .30. I would love to hear about those. Hey, I carry appendix. I would love to share why I like the appendix carry, and let's just respect each other and move on. Within the gun culture, I think we fight too much. You know, go on a forum and type any topic, and you'll see people fighting over the topic. You know, back and forth. Now, I know this is human nature, but it's just a big topic, and I really would just like to grab a burger with you and Ben and just talk about this. Like, why is it that, you know, this is such a constant thing in our gun culture and in other things? This is true for cars and just about everything else. We always fight amongst each other.
Hey, well, Damien, you can have a burger with us if you want. That's fine. I know some good burger joints, and we can go talk about this, but it's pretty simple. This is human nature. I mentioned this a few weeks ago in a podcast, and I'll go ahead and I'll say it again. People make decisions emotionally, and then they justify them logically. They make decisions emotionally, and they justify them logically. And what you're experiencing, Damien, is a lot of emotion. And there's a big emotion. A lot of people don't want to admit that they might have made a bad decision. That's a huge emotion. Again, it goes back to the fear of failure. People might have a gun that they deep down inside wish that they hadn't purchased. But rather than just admit that they purchased something that they didn't like, they're just going to go ahead and cut down everybody else's, okay? Or maybe they shot a gun once and just didn't like it. And so in order to justify their own decision, they just go cut everybody else's decisions down. And part of it is ego and things like that. People are egotistical. I don't think it's just the gun culture, though, Damien. I really don't think it's just the gun culture. I think that is pretty applicable in just about any culture, really. It's human nature. You make a very good point. You make a very good point, and I want to close with this. If we took half the time, we gun owners, I'm talking about, if we gun owners took half the time that we spend arguing with each other and spend that time going after the anti-gunners and the anti-gun politicians, that would be a huge help, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that make things even better for us in terms of our gun rights? So, Damien, that was probably the best point of your voicemail. I'd like to encourage everybody, if you got extra time, rather than bashing other gun owners or other gun platforms or other ammunition platforms and things like that, or rather than arguing and crap like that about training versus not training, how about just take half that time and browbeat your politicians, get involved in an organization that advances gun rights, get involved in some shooting sports, go out and shoot or do something that is going to advance our gun rights. I think that'd be a much more productive use of your time. And I'm just saying just half of it. How about that? Think about that. Well, I want to thank everybody for their voicemails. This would be really good. Keep them coming. My voicemail number is 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. In the lower right-hand corner of my website at handgunworld.com, there's also a call me button, and you can click that, put in your phone number, and it'll automatically hook up your phone with my voicemail. It's pretty nice. Works very well. Lots of people have been using it to great success. If you want to support the show, if you like what I do, please consider joining our Shooters Club podcast. Ben and I just put a brand new video up there recently, a nice long one, a good training video, and you actually get to watch some students practicing the techniques, and you can kind of see some of the highs and lows of some of the students practicing our techniques, and I'm sure you can learn a lot from it. It's the next best thing to taking one of our training classes, and it helps support the work that we do for $75 a year. It's a great membership, $6 a month, a little over $6 a month is what that comes out to, folks. It's not much, and consider that. We've got some classes coming up between now and the end of the year. There's four more classes that we're going to do in 2013, both rifle and pistol classes. Go to handgunworld.com. Check those out. And let's see. Oh, don't forget about Glenn Tate and all of his books. You can go to my recommended books page, and you can pick those up through Amazon. Or if you just want to make a general purchase on Amazon, one way you can support my show without spending any extra money, not a dollar more extra than what you're already going to spend, is if you're going to buy something on Amazon, go to the Handgun World podcast website, which is handgunworld.com, and you'll see a menu item that says Amazon Store. Click on my Amazon Store page, and there's a big icon there that will show up. If you don't see the icon, email me, and I'll give you a direct link. But it says Amazon.com. Click on that and you'll enter my Amazon affiliate program. And every purchase you make, I'll earn a small fee that'll actually come back to support the show. Don't forget to take somebody shooting. Don't forget to join one of the Gun Rights Radio Network. Don't forget to join one of the gun rights organizations like the NRA and Second Amendment Foundation. And don't forget to listen to some of the other podcasts out there on the GRRN and even some of those that are not on the GRRN. I really like Michael Baines, Downrange Radio. I listen to Tom Gresham as much as I can, even though he's not on the Gun Rights Radio Network. I usually listen to the podcast version of his Sunday afternoon shows. I listen to the Road Gunner podcast. I listen to the Politics and Guns podcast. I listen to the Gun Dudes, and I also listen to Gunfighter Cast. So all of those are excellent shows and excellent podcasts. Listen to those. Don't just listen to me. Don't just take it always from me. Get some other opinions. Be open-minded. I'm an open-minded guy. I hope you are too. And with all that said, I want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or that dreaded click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.